Which brings me to my favorite joke from when Beavis and Butthead watch this, where Butthead goes, "What's wrong with that elf?" And then Beavis says, "Yeah, he be illin."
Welcome back to Snow in Southtown, a Christmas podcast. My name is Mike. With me is Rusty.
Mm-hmm.
Really? And you can reach us at snowinsouthtown@gmail.com. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. Today's episode theme, we're sticking with the 80s from last week, and we're doing 80s songs tonight. So we're all Rubik's Cubes and Q-Bert and McDonald's.
Oh, yeah. Iran-Contra scandal. All the way.
That's right. Let's see. Last week we have some new music by Vista Blues, the John Waters tribute EP that is out. Go check that out. And then also coming up later this week, you can order the Ralphie's Red Riders album on cassette from Memorable But Not Honorable Tapes. If that's something you're interested in, the orders launch on Friday, December 10th. It's just the album we did last year, all Christmas story songs, but it's on cassette, limited to 50 copies. And I'm not saying we're going to sell out, but like, they sell out pretty quick of all the ones that they do. I ordered one by a band called The Horror Section. I ordered like 5 minutes like after they launched it, and it was sold out within 10 minutes. So I'm not saying we're going to do that, but if you want one, yeah, go grab it. Anything else that you want to talk about here?
Just want to say happy December, and Christmas is almost over.
December's here, and Christmas is almost over. After this week, after this episode, we've only got two episodes left.
Two more.
That tells you, yeah.
Christmas
that
is
tells you
over.
All you need to know. Yeah, it's almost over. I hope that you have bought all your presents and cooked all your food and,
yeah, I
and
mean,
are ready.
Yeah. I mean, by the time you finish listening to this, you're done, basically. I mean,
that's right.
Yeah, I mean, the other two episodes are almost an afterthought of Christmas. So,
yeah. In fact, they're just all going to be about New Year's stuff. So they're going
to
be New Year's.
Skipping straight to New Year's, yeah.
One on New Year's Eve and one on New Year's Day. Focusing on New
and
Year's.
At the very end, a little bit of Valentine's, just to kind of get you going through the next year.
We're going to mirror the what the stores do. Ready to switch over. Let's see. Let's go to a voicemail from Tommy.
All right.
So we got our friend Tommy. So what Tommy is talking about here, this is actually my wife was telling me that, you know, we had never done this for something fun or something weird, that I should talk about the pickle tradition. And so I was all set to do it, and I get Tommy's voicemail, and guess what Tommy's talking about?
Pickle.
The pickle tradition from Germany, as he says. And we're going to jump right in here to Tommy's voicemail.
The German holiday pickle in Germany. Now, what they do, they take a glass pickle ornament and they hang it on the tree, and they usually hang it last, and it's hidden. And so on Christmas morning, the kid who finds this pickle first, they get to get an extra present. That's a pretty good deal. Or they get to open their gifts first, which is still kind of nice, but the extra gift thing is really cool. Now, if you're an adult, not nearly as cool. If you get the pickle, if you spot the pickle, then you're just going to have good luck. So not quite the same. The German pickle. I think we should just get actual dill pickles out of a jar and just hang them on our trees. That'd be fun. Hey, keep those bells jingling.
So, so look, we had, I think it broke, but we definitely had a pickle ornament for a little while. Do you guys do this?
I've seen the pickle ornament. I guess I never looked into why there is one.
Yeah, well, so there you go. Tommy tells you. You can, you know, there are different things you can do with it. You hide it in the tree, and the kid who finds it gets a extra present or something. There are a lot of different things that you can do. So I actually got ours at like a Dirty Santa game. Do you ever do anything like that? Ours was an ornament, you know, version. And so I ended up stealing this one because I was so, you know, intrigued by this idea of the pickle. Someone, I guess they told me what it was or whatever. And so, yeah. So that's what that's how I got out. But I think it broke. Or maybe it's still in the box, and maybe just the top
like kind of ceramic, right? Or something.
Yeah. It's ceramic. Yeah. It's a cool one. It looks like a pickle. In fact,
did anyone ever hang real pickles on the tree?
Well, that's what Tommy said.
We'll see.
Yeah. Tommy said we should hang real pickles.
I wasn't listening.
You should listen.
I wasn't listening to what he said.
You should listen. Okay. I have so many, you know, I have so many pickles in my fridge because I just grew a lot of cucumbers this year. So,
yeah,
I could do, I could hang, I could fill my tree with pickles.
There's got to be somebody who has just a pickle only Christmas tree.
A pickle tree.
Where you find the real ornament, the non pickle ornament.
Or they're all pickles, but there's one pickle ornament.
One fake pickle.
Right, yeah, you find the fake, yeah. You find the ceramic pickle. And you know, the tree of all pickles.
The easy way to do it is just eat them all until one of them breaks your teeth.
That's true. That's a good point. I found it when the glass is just crunching in your mouth. No, that should have been my something weird with somebody. I'm sure someone has a pickle tree.
Let's hope they're not Aunt B's pickles from Andy Griffith, am I right? Those lousy pickles she made. Remember that episode?
I don't. Sorry.
Oh, that's right. We're the 80s.
Yeah, what are you talking about? Yeah,
the 80s,
this is,
man.
This is the 80s.
Well, they did have a reunion special.
Yeah, but I'm sure it wasn't about pickles.
I think it had at least 1% pickle content.
All right, so 80s Christmas songs. I hope you're ready. Hope you guys are ready for this. All 80s yep. Here. I feel like the when you listen to Christmas radio, you get a lot of 80s. You know, and yeah, and so I think that's also when a lot of the things that we know about Christmas and Christmas celebrations sort of form. We talked about it last week with the TV specials, that you can definitely feel a difference between the 70s and the 80s, even the late 70s and the early 80s, right? And it's like things started to happen in the 80s that are kind of still around today, right?
Yeah, we're stuck with it.
We're stuck with it. So
we're stuck with the 60s and 80s. That's pretty much the only two decades that have ever happened.
That's right. So we're sticking with the 80s, and we're going to talk about some songs. Now, as you guys know, we did a poll earlier this year where we had our friends vote on what they wanted us to talk about, one of the things. And so for this poll, we had a lot of choices, okay? We had Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton, Christmas to Remember. We had The Waitresses, Christmas Rapping. We had Dan Fogelberg, Same Auld Lang Syne.
For some reason.
Because I hate that song. That's why. I hate it. And no one voted for it. And
good.
No, literally zero votes. Wow, I'm just looking. It got zero votes.
It might have been the only thing that got zero votes, huh?
I think
out of all the polls.
Yeah, I'm just realizing that. New Kids on the Block, Funky, Funky Christmas. Or actually, I think it's Funky, Funky Xmas.
Yes, it is.
Alabama's Christmas in Dixie. Brian Adams, Christmas Time. The Pogues, Fairy Tale of New York. And the Ramones, Merry Christmas, I Don't Want to Fight Tonight. Right. This one was so close. The winner, with 20%, though, was Wham's Last Christmas. Of course. And I say of course, but it was not like a blowout by any means. So it was 20%. 17% was The Waitresses and Alabama. 15% was Ramones and New Kids on the Block. So, I mean, they were all pretty close.
There's a lot of tempting ones in that batch where you would really want to vote for it.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, Kenny Rogers and Brian Adams, like maybe like one or two votes each. And then, yeah, none for Dan Fogelberg. That song is so dumb. That song is dumb. You know the song?
I must. I need to listen to it to make sure.
The one where he's like, he's in a grocery store and he meets her. He meets his old girlfriend in a grocery store. And she says, you know, I saw your records in the record store and you must be doing well. I said, the audience is heavenly, but the traveling is hell.
Oh, man.
He's just bragging about himself being a rock star.
And then there's a kid in front of him who's dirty from head to toe. Is that
he's
right?
Dirty from head to toe. Yeah. He just wants to buy that beer at the liquor store.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, so not Dan Fogelberg. One day we're gonna cover that song, and I'm just gonna make you.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it for the bad.
But tonight
80s.
It is way better. Right. Right. Yeah, this is all good 80s stuff. Last Christmas, 1984, And this is recorded in August, you know, because most Christmas songs are recorded earlier in the year. We'll talk about the next one in a minute. Released on December 3rd, a date that we'll talk about in a little bit. Okay. And it reached number 2 on the chart. Again, we'll revisit this discussion in a little while. Right. But it reached number 2. And for a long time, until this year, it was the top selling single to not reach number 1 in England. So it was the all-time top-selling single that had not reached number 1 until New Year's Day of this year. It finally reached number 1.
This year?
Yeah, 2021, New Year's Day, January 1st. Wow. Yeah. So now it's Maroon 5. It has the honor of being the
what top song is it?
The, which one was it? Moves Like Jagger? Yeah.
I don't even know if I know that.
So, last Christmas... was written completely by George Michael, and he recorded all the instruments. He basically princed this song.
Yeah, he princed it.
Was the other dude? Did the other dude even sing?
I don't remember any other voice except George Michael's in the song. Yeah,
right. Man, he probably got half the money too.
The other guy was like, "Can you gonna let me do anything? No, I've already done it. I didn't want to. They probably neither of them wanted to, and he probably just like even." One of those, you know, need a Christmas song? Okay, here you go.
Yeah, well, so the story says, like, they were visiting George Michael's parents, and he was in his childhood bedroom, and he, like, came up with a song, and he played it for him on the keyboard, played it for his bandmate. He's like, here. And there he's like, oh. Yeah, and the guy says, like, he just remembers it being this, like, great moment where he knew this great song was being written. Like, I find that hard to believe. I think if he played me on a little Casio keyboard the chorus of Last Christmas, I'd be like, that's cool. Yeah, like that's
wait,
yeah.
does every Wham song have a I'm at my parents' house story? Because one of them, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, has something like that where it's like my parents
I thought that one was like
left
oh was
note
he at his
said,
parents'
wake
house?
Me up or his friend had yeah. left him a note that says like wake me up before you go-go.
Right. Yeah. But I don't
want to say it was at
parents.
My parents' house, maybe not. But it was like a note or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm not like the biggest fan of the song. I don't turn it off like when it comes to the radio, but I don't think I've ever purposely like went to my phone or I don't have the record or anything. Like I've never purposely turned it on.
Yeah.
But it comes on all the time. Yeah. I don't change it. I will say, I think I've told this on the podcast before, but, like we're playing songs at a party a few years ago and we played this one and I loved it. Like I had so much fun playing it. And I kind of got a new respect for it playing it, you know. So like the last few years, I've been probably a little more into it. I don't know. It's like I guess I learned the lyrics and everything, you know. So
I was gonna say the lyrics. As much as people know the chorus, I don't think they know the verses that well.
Right.
At least I wouldn't.
Yeah. Well, when I played it, then I learned it. It's actually they're pretty good. It's pretty good.
So. I do have questions about the lyrics. I don't know if talk about that.
No,
well, they're kind of joke questions, but also kind of serious because it's like it's hard to tell what the song means. Because Last Christmas I gave you my heart. The very next day you gave it away. So far that makes sense.
Yeah.
This year I'll give it to someone special. Does that mean the first time he gave it, he didn't think the first person he gave his heart to was special?
Well, he thought she was, but on December 26th she gave it away.
She gave it away.
Yeah.
But. He thought she was, right. So here's my question then. Wouldn't he think the new person he gives it to is also special in the same way that he thought the first person was also special? So how does he know?
She could do the same thing. She could do the same.
Exactly the same thing. I'm wondering, we hear the song every year. So this Christmas, are we hearing, there's always a Last Christmas? Like he does this every year.
Every
Christmas, he gives his heart away to somebody he thinks is special.
Yeah.
And then he resolves to give it to somebody who actually is special, and he makes the same mistake every year.
It's a vicious
this
cycle.
This ongoing thing.
Yeah.
Since 1984.
He's got to make better decisions. Really.
I'm just saying, there's no way to know. If you think somebody is special, you know, we've all been in bad relationships, and we thought the person was special at the time. It's not like, and it's...
Well, there are these people
I'm not going to make this mistake again. It's like, how do you know? You didn't know he better the first time. What's different?
I do think that's kind of realistic too. I mean, that's how people act. Like,
that's how people act. I'm not going to do this again.
Right.
Yeah. Once bitten, twice shy.
Yeah. Once bitten, twice shy.
Yeah, which is another great song. White Snake, I think.
No, Great White.
Great White. Great White Snake.
Great White Snake.
Great White Scorpion.
So once bitten, twice shy. So, like, is that like fool me once? Not gonna fool me again?
Not gonna, you won't.
Not gonna fool the kid.
Not gonna get away. Yeah, the thing George Bush made up.
The Bush said. Not gonna fool
me again. Don't fool me again. That's the point. Whatever the thing is.
Whatever. They say this in Tennessee.
Tennessee or Texas?
Well, in Texas. But they probably say it in Tennessee.
Probably
too.
Say in Tennessee too. Point is, I'm not a good speaker and probably shouldn't be present. Oh gosh. Yes. Once been twice shot. But now we know it's like probably more like 35 times bitten. And I don't know how many times shy.
That's right. It's been a long time, George.
I guess I need to give my overall of this song. I like it. It's I don't really get tired of it, I guess. I will say that I try, it's hard to do this kind of thing because it's one of those things you don't notice until you notice, but like I was trying to figure out when do I space out when this song comes on. and I think I determined it's hard to pay attention to something but also allow yourself to space out. But I think I determined around 2:50, around 2 minutes and 50 seconds, I space out.
What's going on there?
Just another verse. And it just feels, and it's a long song. It's like what, 4:50 or something? Almost 5 minutes, I think, maybe 4.5. And so it's a pretty long song. For such a repetitive song that's just going dun 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 dun. Yeah. It's, and so if this were like a 3-minute song, I think it'd be good. Because about 2:50 I start spacing out when I'm thinking like this should be fading by now. But yeah, there's another
verse. Where's the fade?
Yeah, where's the fade? But
he's not finished with the story though. A crowded room, friends with tired eyes.
I guess. It's also impossible for me to follow the music video. I've tried. It's like,
oh, I don't see. I don't know anything. I don't know if I've ever seen it.
Something about a brooch. YouTube has it remastered in 4K now. It looks great. For real.
I'd probably zone out.
Yeah. There's this like George Michael's got this girlfriend that he's in love with, and he like gave her a brooch that she's still wearing.
Oh, that's not fair.
But while she's with somebody else who might be his bandmate, but I'm not sure because I don't know him well enough to know. But yes, it's a good song. When it first starts, you go, "Oh, this is the best song ever made." And then after about 2 minutes, when is this going to end?
I like it. Like I said, I have a newfound respect
for
it. And so I like the verses now. I think that the lyrics are, I actually like the verse lyrics better than the chorus. And the chorus is kind of dumb.
Really?
I think so. I think the verse is good. I think the verses are good. Mm-hmm. So, but I probably zone out too. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it becomes background music after a while.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Catchy. Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I've got no problems with this song.
Have you ever put it on? Like, purposely? Like, did you ever own it?
I've never owned it. I have. My wife bought the Wham's Make It Big album. And I have it on my Christmas mixes that I've made. Like, I have one big Christmas mix it's like my historical document, and it's on there.
Ooh, I wonder if I played it on my radio show. It's possible. It's possible that I threw it in on one of my radio, but because I was just thinking, like, I've never made like a big mix like you have.
Yeah.
But I do have the radio show, and I've done some years. I've done 3 or 4 shows. Like this year, I might do 4 or 5.
Yeah.
So it's possible it got thrown in. You know.
I'll say this: I've never heard a good cover of it.
Oh, I was gonna say. I was gonna ask. You don't like Taylor Swift's?
No.
Okay. Yeah. I'll say that. If I had to pick one, I would pick hers, but I don't like any of them.
Yeah, and I think she sings pretty well now, maybe, but on that particular song, everything just sounds very flatly delivered. Like, let's grab spot, I give you my heart, but that there's no soulful delivery or anything. There's no dynamics.
For her, I think that the verses are decent for her. I still, again, I would never put it on.
Yeah.
But the other cover I hear, I don't know what it is. Is it Glee? Is that the other cover?
They've done everything. I don't know. There's another one that I think is famous, but I don't remember which one.
I think it's Glee. It's
Avril Lavigne, maybe?
It's bad. Oh, maybe it could be that one. Maybe that's one.
Or is it Adam Levine?
I've already cut that.
Don't cut it. Do not cut. Now you got to not cut it. See, so this will make sense. No cutsies.
All right, I'll see. Okay. Anything else about Last Christmas?
No, I like it though.
Yeah, I got nothing else to say. So, all right. So now let's move on.
It's Christmas time. There's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light.
Oh boy.
Same year, 1984.
Same
release date. We were talking about, this is my pick. Yep. Band-Aids, Do They Know It's Christmas? So,
yeah.
Here we are in 1984. Now, here's the thing, is that song that we just talked about, Last Christmas, was recorded in August, because that's what normal people do. Yeah. This song was recorded on November 25th.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, Thanksgiving for us, right, this year. Mm-hmm. Thanksgiving, and then released on December 3rd. Now, I'm still waiting for a record that we sent to the plant in May, in early May. And I'm not going to get it probably till late January. So just imagine getting a record back in 2 weeks and having it in record stores. But of course, yeah, if you're these people,
yeah.
It was number one in the UK singles chart, because I just said Last Christmas only reached number two. So this was number one. 2.5 million copies in the US during Christmas of 1984. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, there's so much that we could talk about with the song. I'll go through and say some things, and I know mm-hmm. you have some things too, but I'm not even going to like get into most of, you know, the things that you could say. I'll say this is a record that like I'm fascinated by. Like, it's something that I can, as long as I can remember, because of the age I am, as long as I can remember Christmas radio and the format that we know it, this is a song that I associate with that format. And so it's like, when I listen to Christmas radio, I know I'm going to, the songs that I like that I'm going to hear are going to be like Wonderful Christmas Time, the John Lennon song, you know, like, and this one, and Last Christmas, like, I just know, like, the rotation, and this is one of those things that I associate with it, but I never owned it, but I do have a copy now. I think, did I get you one?
You got me one, too, yeah.
Yeah, so we each have a copy now.
A copy.
So, I liked it enough that I bought it when I found it, you know, now as an adult, and you know, while I don't think it's like some truly like amazing song, it's fine. And while none of the performers are really like my top of the top artists or anything, like, I just like the idea that they all did this, especially on such short notice. I had no idea it was on such short notice.
I
would have guessed it was in the summertime, like normal people. But the song is catchy enough and it's fine enough that I'm never going to like change it. You know, it's on the radio. So 1984, series of reports on BBC are talking about the famine. So Bob Geldof of the Boomtown Rats is like, hey, I want to do a charity single. Meets with Midge Ure from Ultravox, and he's playing with Thin Lizzy and people, on November 5th. So November 5th, he meets with him and is like, let's do this charity single. Okay. Starts calling, you know, British and Irish musicians to see who would want to help out, right? Not expecting that everyone would say yes. The story that they say is only three people turned them down, but they wouldn't say who. People like Bowie and McCartney were unavailable, but they sent recorded messages. Have you ever listened to the B-side?
Yeah, the extended version, yeah.
Yeah, and right, and then they did it for the 12-inch version, right. And then, like, Big Country and Frankie Goes to Hollywood, like, people like that, too. Even, like, the Thompson Twins were out of the country, but they still donated the proceeds from Lay Your Hands on Me, or some of the proceeds from Lay Your Hands on Me, to the cause. Also, Wham! Gave all the proceeds from Last Christmas to this charity.
Okay. So the number one and number two song.
we're going to this, exactly. Yeah. So, of course, they, you know, the first thing they decided was that they had to write a song because they didn't want to pay royalties for doing a cover. Right. So they met on November 5th, had to write a song. They wanted Trevor Horn to produce.
Yeah.
You know, I guess everybody knows Trevor Horn. What would you say? What would you attribute to him?
The Buggles. The Buggles. Yeah.
What else would he be known for? I mean, he was producing Frankie Goes to Hollywood. They have three number ones that year.
The Art of Noise.
Yeah. For me, he did one of my favorite Bell and Sebastian records.
Later.
Dear Catastrophe Waitress. Right.
Yeah.
But that year he had three number ones with Frankie Goes to Hollywood. So anyway, he couldn't do it. He didn't have the time, but he gave them his studio for free on a Sunday, November 25th. So he's like, I can't do it, but in a few weeks you can have my studio for a whole day. Right. So that actually helps, because now they have a place where they tell all these musicians to show up. Right. So they did the backing tracks ahead of that date at yours, like home studio, including a Paul Weller lead guitar that was left off. So I don't know if that exists anywhere, but that's kind of cool that they did that. I didn't know that. So Sunday, November 25th, all of these people show up at the studio. And I didn't know this. I just read this. They started with the climax, with the big, you know, chorus.
Okay.
Just kind of like an icebreaker. You get all these people in the same room. So they're like, let's just do this first. So then they had to go and do their individual solo parts in front of each other. That had to be so intimidating.
Oh, I know.
Like, depending on who you are.
You know? Like, there's Sting next to George Michael.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, I couldn't imagine having to do that. There's another story about Boy George waking up, I think in America, waking up late and, like, having to hop on a flight and get over there.
Whoops.
Yeah. Wake me up before you go. Bill Collins showed up in the morning with his drums, set up his drums, waited all day for all the singing and everything. Then finally everybody left or was done. I don't know what they were doing. And finally he got to record his drums and they were like, all right, that's good. And he's like, no, wait, I want to do another take. So, like, look, that's kind of cool. Like, I rip on Phil Collins a lot, but that's cool that he waited till like 7 at night to do his drums and then was wanted.
Why do you rip on Phil Collins?
I don't know. I just do. I don't know.
All right. I love Phil Collins.
You like Phil Collins? Okay.
Quite a bit. Well, there
again, there's so much more to the story. There are singers that you wouldn't expect to be on there, including singers from Kool and the Gang.
Yeah.
They were visiting Phonogram, like, and that was their British like label.
Right.
And so they were visiting in London when Geldof went in to pitch the idea.
Uh-huh.
And I mean, again, it was all so quick. They must have still been in town for the recording date, and they showed up and they're on it. So radio promotion started the next day. So Geldof was actually already scheduled to be on the radio to promote like his music, but so instead he turned into this. Started with 250,000 orders like that day or that week, and it reached a million by like December 8th or something. And the label had 5 factories in Europe pressing the record. So.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's how you get there. Number one in the UK, of course. However, in the US, it did not chart, or at least didn't reach the top 10, because it sold a bunch, but the radio airplay that year, believe it or not, compared to now, it was slow. They didn't play it a lot on the radio. So it sold a ton, but for like our US charts, the radio airplay goes into it. So it didn't even chart, didn't make the top 10 or whatever for us in the US, but yeah. Another interesting story was they went on Top of the Pops for the Christmas episode, and a lot of the artists showed up, but George Michael and Bono weren't there. So for George Michael's line, they did an audience member like singing at that point. But for Bono's line, Paul Weller was there and he did it. So he got to do the Tonight, Thank God It's Them.
He got to have the famous line.
And finally, they hoped to raise 70,000 pounds, which would be about $100,000. And in fact, raised like $10.5 million, basically.
Wow.
So, and then of course, 85 would be We Are the World, and even right. Live Aid. All of that stuff is probably inspired.
Comic relief.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. So I'm for it. I mean, I like it, and just again, I'm always scratching the surface of like all that you could learn about this song, but I'm pretty fascinated by that process being so quick and that it all just came together and all these people jumped in and said they'd do it. You know?
Yeah.
And showed up. I can't get people to show up for anything.
Oh, I know. Don't I know it?
So.
I wish they would do, maybe they have, but I wish they would do some kind of definitive documentary about the making of this thing, and like we get to see all the behind the scenes stuff, and they should put together like a box set of just you know, their guitar solo and whatever else they can dig up, and like isolated tracks and things like that. I think it'd be worth putting out.
I mean, if you think of it, you just did it again for charity, you know, you could probably raise some money.
Oh, exactly. Like, here's a box set, and with a, you know, a DVD and a documentary of Do They Know It's Christmas? And yeah, we'll do it for charity again. They've been re-recording this song a few times anyway.
Yeah, those haven't come out so good.
Those are
not
the
one in 2004. Yeah,
I don't know how often they do it. Every 10 years, maybe?
I think they've just done two, maybe.
Okay.
I bought the 2004 CD, I remember.
They did 94 and 2004, but not 2014, maybe?
Maybe.
And they said, that's enough of that.
Yeah. Have you ever listened? You know, so Trevor Horn did do he did the B-side, like he just had to mix it. And then he did the 12-inch. Have you ever listened to the 12-inch, that extended
version? Well, that's the one with the David Bowie and Paul McCartney talking everything, right?
Right. Well, so the B-side is them talking over it, but the B-side doesn't have like the singing or anything. So what he did was he made a 12-inch version the next year and sort of put it all together.
Yes, that's what I'm used to hearing.
Yeah. But okay. that one's kind of weird because it does have some kind of like breakdown parts that like I could probably do without, because there's parts where it's just kind of like synth drums kind of, but not them talking. So, but the 12-inch remixes, right, as far as I understand from what I can remember about the time, were for like dance clubs.
Yeah.
But so were people dancing?
I think
they were dancing the song?
I think they just made it because they wanted to have like the full package.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is kind of what we did when we did our parody of this, yeah. There Will That's Be right. Snow. And one of the things we did was put out like a kind of like a maxi single. Or at least
that's it, all the remixes, right?
Yeah, and it had kind of what I was hoping, saying for like what I would hope a box set of this would be like, which would be, yeah, it had like the extended mix, it had the radio mix, it had the, and I was inspired by the part where Paul McCartney and David Bowie and stuff talk
oh,
when
yeah,
I do my
talking.
Little
yep.
my British thing where I was like, it has never snowed in the entire country, you know.
Yes.
So
yes,
I thought
yes.
that was kind of like that, and also it was like a good place to just, you know, dig in with the parody and satire a bit. But yeah. Oh, the one before I forget, there's one other thing this inspired years and years later, which was a Halloween song called "Did They Know It Was Halloween." You ever heard that song?
No, is that real?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a great song, and it's all celebrities. It's got Beck, and I think I want to say Arcade Fire. I haven't looked at the list of names in a while, but like it came out, I guess mid 2000s, late 2000s, and then it's got like comedians like David Cross and stuff on it.
Wow.
And I was just at the record store one day, and it was this thing that said, "Do They Know It's Halloween?" And it had this sticker on it that had all the list of everybody on it. And I was like, all right, I'll pay $7 for this or whatever it was. And so I still have it. You can't even find it on Spotify or anything, but you can find a YouTube video of it. They made an animated music video. But
oh,
it's
wow.
It's a great song. Do They Know It's Halloween? And it was for, I can't even remember if it was for charity or what, but it's a parody of this.
Right.
For Halloween, and does not have problematic lyrics because it's just a goofy song about Halloween. Yeah.
Thanking God is them instead of you.
Yeah, none of that. You know, and I assume that neither of us want to get too much into lyrics, and I guess other people have probably done it elsewhere. We might have a few things to say. I don't know. What do you?
No, I mean, I really wasn't. I mean, to me, it's fine. No, I totally will. But man, I mean, when you write a song in 2 weeks, it's kind of a miracle that it even comes out. Like, and I guess there wasn't enough time really to go like, hey, should we
maybe
check this, or should we let somebody, you know, tell us
right.
what they think? Like Trevor Horn was like, I'd love to help you, but like, guys, you're doing this, you know, you can have my studio on a Sunday, but I can't help with this right now. You know, it's like,
yeah, you listen to the song and you think they should have contacted someone in Ethiopia who was, you know what I mean? Who knew anything and who would have eventually, I guess, gotten with them on where the money was going to go and all the rest of it, and said like, do you have any problems with what we've written for the lyrics? Should we rewrite it? You know, but yeah, you're right. They just rushed it so fast and they wrote it from their point of view, which was, you know, the wrong point of view. heart in the right place. Like it's hard to say how much you want to give credit to it, because I feel like I do, but also I feel like I'm not the right person to give the credit. Does that make sense?
No, I totally agree.
Because yeah. I feel like, well, their heart's in the right place. They're fine. It's good to hear. But also I'm like, yeah, well, you're saying, you know, like, so, yeah. I mean, I guess everybody knows, like, when you listen to the lyrics, or even especially when you read the lyrics, if you don't, because it's hard to hear every line, you know?
Right, right.
When you, like, read them, you're like, oh, my gosh. Like, shouldn't they have known better? I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, I just feel like, knowing now that it's rushed, if even me, and I'm not trying to get in touch with Paul McCartney or David Bowie, like, right. If I get a good idea on November 25th or whatever that I need to, like, get a lot of people involved with,
yeah,
Even last year with the John Waters thing, I was like, you know what? I really like this. I'm going to wait till next year. You know, like, if it's something that's really ambitious,
yeah,
I'm going to put it on my list. I'm going to attack it later, you know?
Well, again, you know, if I'm going to play the giving them the heart is in the right place game, I would say, like, well, no, they thought this was a pressing need and it needed to happen right away. Like, they couldn't wait.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Right.
I don't know.
When we did ours, we were doing vocals by Thanksgiving. I know that.
When we did our song, our parody song.
Right.
Yeah, just our parody. Yeah. A lot more time than this.
Yeah, we're trying to get friends. And so I know, like, when I went down to New Orleans to play a show, we were getting vocals down there. But that was Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And so we had already, like, done the backing track and everything.
And it was an ordeal. I mean, even our
little song. It was.
I mean, that's still the biggest song we've ever done, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and people have no idea what we're talking about. Basically, we just did a parody of this song. So.
We did a parody, which is and it's really good.
It's fun. It's very fun.
It's good. No, I was happy when you asked me to, like, when you said, like, yeah, I think you could probably do a good job, like, coming up with some like the way the music sounds for this.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, oh yeah, oh yeah, please let me. Because yeah, I wanted to do that synth line and, like, and all that. And the drums, because that's my bread and butter anyway, is right. All the synth stuff. And because, yeah, Phil Collins, you know, I think he's a great drummer. I like all his, I like the way all of his songs sounds. And, like,
yeah
he's great. I mean, he's the drum line of, he's the drum voice of the 80s for sure.
I just rip on him a lot. It's funny.
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes sense to rip. I can understand why anybody would rip on him, but in my in my old age especially, I just really love Phil Collins more than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, good. There you go. Yeah, cuz honestly, there's no one in here that I'm like, "Oh, I love this guy." Right? I don't think. I mean, is there anybody involved with this?
Well, I mean, trying to think, like, there's people where I really like a lot of their songs, like,
yeah
like, I mean, Ultravox has Vienna, and
I mean, they all have solid stuff.
They all,
I
have, mean, stuff,
like, there's none of my top guys, like, yeah, if Paul McCartney was running the show, yeah, I'd be more interested.
Sure, you know? Yeah, he, and even his message was nothing. It was just like,
no,
hey guys, no, sorry I can't be there. That was it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey guys, sorry I can't be there. There's, like, did he say anything else? Or did they just put in the, hey guys, sorry I can't be there, and that was it?
Hey guys, sorry I can't be there.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, would it have been, was it impossible to just get Boy George in New York? Like, is that just impossible? In 85 or 84?
Yeah, like, yeah, send me.
Yeah.
Do you actually have to be in the place? I mean, I know it would have been a lot harder. They would have had to mail things, I guess, or something.
Yeah, I'm guessing. Right? I'm guessing, but
and
I mean,
they couldn't even mail, like, digital tapes or anything. They would have had to mail, like, actual
tapes. Yeah,
which would have been, I think it would have been just too much of an ordeal. They can't do. They can't just email.
So wake him up in New York or wherever he was, and get him on the plane.
Oh.
But then I was thinking also, like, so pressing the records. Right, mm-hmm. And then you had to get those to America. I mean, they must have, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, they must have pressed them, thrown them on a plane, and got them over here by December 3rd.
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's crazy. but I love stuff like that. I love it. They did that Help album in the 90s, where I don't remember what the charity was, but the idea was that everybody would write and record a song in 24 hours, and then it would be pressed and then released, like, within 24, I don't know, like super shortly.
Yeah, those are always fun.
Yeah, and like Oasis, you know, did that, and Paul Weller was there with them doing that song, and so I've read a lot about that just because of Oasis. But I mean, yeah, like, you know, I love stuff like that.
Yeah,
anything that's like people just commit to this certain amount of time.
I like the idea of forcing art.
Because
there's so much is made about, oh, you have to, artist and the inspiration has to hit and you evoke the muse or whatever, and like, no, it takes years, and no. I like factory crank it out art, and the fact that it can come out just as good often,
right,
as something that would have taken you years, or that people spend so much time on their precious project. And right. You know, even though this thing has a lot of problems lyrically, but musically, I don't think it has any, really.
No, yeah, it's pretty good.
I think it's solid, and the Feed the World thing. I think if they had stuck with Feed the World and forgotten to Let Them Know It's Christmas Time part,
right?
That's a good sentiment that could kind of always work, no matter who happens to be in trouble at the time. You know what I mean? Like, so. Yeah, and musically, I like 80, you know, it's a good, I like 80 cents and all that anyway.
So both of these songs, I mean, Last Christmas and this one,
yeah,
1984, if that's the music you like, they're both pretty perfect. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I have this discussion a lot of times, actually, with people where it's like, my philosophy is like, my music is like a snapshot.
Yeah.
And I'm not like, you know, recording in Capitol Studios, and it's like, I'm just recording at home or whatever, or even
yeah,
little studios, is like, just do it.
Right.
Put your best effort into it. And then like, this is how we sounded that weekend. You know?
Yeah.
It's like, this is it. That's it. I wrote it and I will record it. And that's like, it's not going to do anybody any good for me to spend 3 months trying to perfect this thing.
I mean, which is a lot of what rock and roll used to be anyway. I mean, like the first Beatles record was, all right, lads, we have 2 days or whatever.
All day. Yeah.
Yeah.
All day.
Or one day, right?
Yeah, at first,
like,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, what songs do you have? Let's record them. Yeah, yep. All right, here's the record.
Yeah,
and it's
and
good.
Then sometimes, right, and sometimes it'd be like, the next record, it would be like, hey, we're going to pull out that one that we didn't use from that last session.
right.
We're going to throw that on the record.
We'll throw this, some film. Yeah.
Yep, and so, and that's how I am. Like, and Robert Schneider of the Apples and Stereo, it's the same thing. Like, he'll say, like, some of those old Apples records especially will have, like, glitches or like bad notes or whatever, kind of, you know, it's like,
right.
I'm the same way. Like, I'll go back and replace some of it's bad, or if I hear it and I don't like it, I'll replace it. But there's also things on my songs where it's like, oh, you know, I probably could have done that note better if I went back and tried it a second or third time, but also it's fine.
Right.
Like, it's just me singing on a record. Like, it's not, you know, something that's going to be preserved forever. Like, it's just, that's just it. You know, that's how I sounded that day.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, I see it almost as like a hybrid. It's not a live record, mm-hmm, right? But it kind of is. Like, it can be.
Kind of is, yeah.
If you see it as like your first time through this song is what you're going to keep, unless you really just mess it up, right? But like, as long as you don't just totally miss a beat or a note, like, this is it. Like, it's kind of like a live, this take is going
to
be it.
And you're not using Pro Tools to fix everything. Yeah.
So, yeah. So I like that philosophy, and this one doesn't have that. I mean, this one, everything, they nailed everything. So again, I would be so, and I'm not really like this, but in that room, like, I'd probably be super intimidated to like sing my solo line in front of all those people. But I mean, they're all like professional vocalists.
They all have, every one of those solo artists had the biggest heads in the world, though. Bono, Sting, George Michael, those guys had no problem with ego. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but in that setting, you don't think that they would be like, I don't know. I wonder if there's,
I think they would be, I think if anything, they would just look at each other like, who's he think he is?
Why does he get to say, thank God it's them?
Yeah.
I want to say that. I want to put it in those people's faces.
Now, my take on that line, if we want to talk about a little bit of this.
Yeah, go for it.
Is that it's treated the same way that Phil Collins' song, Just Another Day for You and Me in Paradise, is. I think it's the same thing. Does that make sense? Like,
Yeah.
That it's just saying, it's not saying, oh, thank God it's them, for real. I think that there's some irony to it. And there's a lot of irony in these lyrics. So I think it's saying, like, it's still misguided, but I think what it's trying to say is you should appreciate what you have because not everybody does. That's all it's trying to say.
Be happy with what you have. Right.
I think some people take the line literally.
Oh, yeah. I hope not. I mean, I definitely don't. I make fun of it. But, yeah.
I think they do, though. I think some people be like, oh, man, he really wishes or he's really glad that it's them and not him. but, yeah, so there's that.
I guess I don't talk to enough people about it. I mean, basically, it's me and you. But
oh, well, I mean, just based
I don't know if people really
just,
think.
Just what I've heard, like, they did some TV thing once. This was years ago when I saw it, television, where they would talk about the song and they talked about that line. And I think a lot of people who talked about it thought, like, oh, wow. What a rude thing to say.
What are you watching that you're seeing people like dissect the lines of the song?
I want to say it was either like a VH1 thing.
Yeah.
Or and I know Pop Up Video did a pop up video of it where they made fun of some stuff.
Yeah.
And they got one thing wrong too, because Pop Up Video tried to make the point, because it's like, do they know it's Christmas? And the pop up was, do they know they're Muslim? Which is not even true. I mean, if you're talking about Africa in general as a continent,
right?
Then there's 49% Christian, 42% Muslim. If you're talking about Ethiopia, 67% Christian, 31% Muslim. I looked it up. And so, like, it's incorrect whether you're talking about the country or the bigger continent, because, of course, they conflate the two in this song.
Sure.
there won't be snow in Africa. That was part of our joke.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it doesn't really snow in Ethiopia. In Africa, of course, it does, like South Africa and, like, but... but yeah,
never,
I mean,
snowed the entire continent.
It's never, not even the highest peaks of Mount Kilimanjaro. But yeah, even the pop-up video, in trying to be snarky and make fun of the song, got it wrong.
I do appreciate the sarcasm, though. That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Do they know?
I mean, the joke was like, but the joke made a bad assumption.
Yeah, no, yeah, that was. I just appreciate the sentiment of sarcasm.
The attempt. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
But like, as far as like what's Christian, it's like, it's not too far off from the USA, which is I think around 70 now, maybe less now than like the last time there was a big poll or whatever, but survey, whatever the word is I'm looking for, is a poll,
survey, poll, whatever, yeah,
poll, yeah. Pew Research doing all this. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, the only other real thing I want to say about the lyrics is, did they do this on purpose where Sting is the one who sings the bitter sting of tears?
Ooh, I didn't even think of that.
Because it's a bad enough line to begin with.
Right.
And then Sting is singing it. He gets
I
to say his own
rewrite.
His own name.
We need the documentary.
We need the documentary, because we're not going to cut it. Just me and you on a podcast trying to figure this song out. We need some experts.
We should have reached out to somebody to interview for this.
It's a world of dread and fear where the only water flowing is the
bitter sting of tears.
And it's Sting who sings that line.
All right. Should we move on? Anything else about that song? We've talked a lot about it.
There could be, but we'll move on.
Yeah, we're trying to... All right, let's go to something fun. This is Rusty.
We'll take a little break and do something fun. Cool?
Sweet! Awesome!
All right, my something fun's a little different this time. I'm taking it kind of back to some of our season one stuff where we maybe thought about our childhoods a little bit more.
All right.
And so this one, I wanted it to kind of fit some of the things we're talking about. And so really what I'm talking about is like a very particular moment in the mid 80s, 1984. And so really I'm talking about the Christmas of 84, where, like I said, I was 9 years old that year. You were a little younger,
right?
But this was the first year I kind of remember thinking like, I'm kind of becoming my own person now. Like, I'm not, everything's not just from my parents now. like it, the music I listen to or anything like that. I'm able to like develop my own taste at this point.
Right.
And so this was kind of the one of the first years I remember thinking some of those things. And so I just have really like strong memories of listening to the radio that year.
Okay.
And me and my siblings. So it's like the three kids, as opposed to like my parents giving me a Chipmunks record or here's the Snoopy Christmas record or something like that. Yeah. And so listening to the radio and it being 1984 and this song had just come out. And so I remember hearing it for the first time and I was young enough that I didn't know even that it was a new song. I was like, oh, this must be an old Christmas song I just never heard. And so I remember that Feed the World felt very like big and awesome and Christmassy too. And yeah, and I kind of gathered the idea, even if I didn't know until maybe a little later that it was for charity. Like I knew that it had this like big message that I thought was, you know, the Feed the World part I thought was cool because I knew about world hunger.
Sure.
So that was out. And then Wham had just come out that year. And so what's weird is I didn't know what new songs and old songs were necessarily. So I wasn't like, oh, a new song from Wham. I was just like, okay, here's some stuff on the radio. And so the other thing that was happening, this was the year that the Cabbage Patch Kids record came out.
Oh, okay.
So that was new. I did know that was new just because that was a new album.
Right.
Mannheim Steamrollers, Deck the Halls, that's when this came out. So like we're hearing that on the radio like for the first time. Kenny and Dolly's Christmas to Remember came out that year.
It was big year.
Queen's Thank God for Christmas was 84. And so those were all 84 songs. And then there were songs I was hearing for the first time because I was kind of just old enough to like, I don't know, not old enough to listen to the radio, but old enough to kind of like stay up late and listen to like later night radio when they would play like cool stuff. And so they were playing some of the older 80s stuff like Bob and Doug McKenzie's 12 Days of Christmas, the TV thing,
right.
The Waitress's Christmas Wrapping from 81. Oh, this was also when Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer was re-released in 84. Christmas in Dixie was becoming even more popular, I think. It came out in 82, but they were playing it even more now, it seemed like. And then I think a little bit of The Pretenders' 2,000 Miles. You don't hear that a lot even today. But yeah, so I just remember like just being like a kid, but an older kid and sitting in front of the radio and just like, yeah, it was like the most Christmassy Christmas in a way. And it wasn't just like being a little kid with parents. It was like, it's kind of becoming not a grown up, but like a preteen. And yeah, so that's my something fun. It was like this moment in 1984.
So you can remember hearing those songs.
Yeah, for the first time.
Yeah,
yeah. Like they would have been brand new. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. So I mean, I think that we're getting closer to me being that age with the next song that you're about to do. So
right.
Kind of makes sense because I can remember definitely some music from that year. So
right. And by then, you know, I was an old fart who didn't care anymore.
Right.
So, you know, 3 years.
As you're talking, I was going, I have a folder with some pictures I had scanned from my mom's like photo albums. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, there's not much from 84. I put the years for all of them. There are only two pictures from 84, and I don't even think they're Christmas, but there's one that's cool. My brother's standing by like the cabinet, and he's holding a box of Lucky Charms.
Yeah,
that's a really cool Lucky Charms box. But so the only Christmas stuff is from 85, and actually I posted a picture last year with the Cabbage Patch doll. Mm-hmm. And so I've got a lot of pictures there from 85, but I still can't remember. I don't remember the radio in 85.
Yeah.
So, you know, that would be different. But yeah, no, that's interesting.
Oh, and the other couple of things that will only mean anything to anybody who might have been local to the area is the most popular radio station in Jackson had like some original Christmas songs that they did that were comedy songs. And so those were also playing at that time too. Yeah.
And so you said I think we've talked about, can you find those still or are they just gone?
They're just gone as far as I can tell. I found a remake of one of them that they did like in the early 2000s, but it wasn't the original. And then the other one I can't find at all. And it was like, it was just like a morning shift that had all these characters, and they did a song right. for them. They played all the time though, so like it's in my brain.
Yep.
And it's like a Christmas song I heard a billion times just that one year. But yeah, I've looked for it, can't find it.
So, you know, like in New Orleans, we had the morning show and they do goofy stuff. And yeah. I can remember certain things that I think are just gone. Like, I don't think yeah. they exist anywhere.
I mean,
it's kind of crazy. Someone like, I just think like, you know, a college class or something, like someone should focus like time and energy on like
right.
archiving it. Like, there's got to be someone with tapes out there somewhere. You just have to find them and archive it. But again, that takes time and money, and who's going to do it? Like, you have to find somebody's yeah. going to do it.
I had kind of an opportunity when I was in high school, because we, my friend Obi and I would do like these parodies of the morning show where we would do characters that were like kind of based on theirs, but
right.
make it fly. And the DJ learned about them and got in touch with us, and we talked for a while and stuff. But
wow.
But so I guess I should have, if I had known any better, I would have said like, can you give me that Christmas tape?
Right, right.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
All right. We're ready to move on to our last song.
Yeah, let's move on a few All years.
Right. Going to our last song. We're going to 87.
Yeah.
This is Rusty's pick. Run DMC, Christmas in Hollis.
Yeah, a world of difference between 84 and 87.
Yeah. By the way, this is released on November 25th, which is the day that Band-Aid recorded theirs, by the way. So 3 years earlier. Yeah.
So their release date is normal the people. They're finally, yeah, they're yeah. finally getting together to say, let's make a record.
Let's make a record, right? That's going to sell millions of copies here and in America. Yeah. Let's do this.
So, yeah, this is from the very first Very Special Christmas, which we've talked about a little bit on the show.
Right.
And the best track, in my opinion, on that whole collection.
Yeah.
You probably disagree. I don't know.
No, I think so.
Okay. Produced by Rick Rubin, who was, you know, doing the Run DMC stuff anyway around this time. And uses a sample. I didn't know this until I was older, but the sample that used the da 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 is from Clarence Carter's Backdoor Santa.
Yep.
Which is a song I like. An old yep. dirty song. And yeah, I mean, I know I've said this on the show before, but out of almost every Christmas song, if I'm going through like one of my mixes or something, and I'm like, I don't feel like listening to this skip. I don't feel like listening to this skip. I don't feel like listening to this skip. When it gets to Christmas in Hollis, I don't. I'll almost always listen to Christmas in Hollis. Right. And I don't know if it's just that Rick Rubin production or the sample or just the fact that it still feels, I mean, I know it's the rapping feels very mid-80s, you know, I'm here to say kind of stuff.
Right, right.
But it still feels pretty, I don't know, it feels kind of contemporary in a way, in its own way. It doesn't feel dated to me for some reason. Maybe no. No? Okay. I didn't know if I was just crazy because I was, I'm so used to the song. But like, it definitely sounds like, I mean, I'm not going to say old school rap, because to me old school rap is more like 79 to 81. 80, by 87, it's mainstream, whatever.
Right.
Because, you know, between 81 and 87 for rap music, it was different. And then by the 92, rap is over. It's gone.
Hey, I went to 94.
You went to 94. I made it to 92. Yeah. And then had a renaissance with Outkast, if you count them. And a little Nicki Minaj here and there for me. But yeah, that 80s stuff. Because we had a whole channel I would listen to that would just play all the, I really like the electronic rap, like the Egyptian Lover and wow, Nucleus yeah. and all that jam on it. That was my stuff. That was like the space age sounding right, stuff. Right. But anyway, back to Christmas in Hollis. So yeah, I just think this is a great song, and it's hard to even say much about the song. But yeah, what do you think?
So in 87, I was a huge Run DMC fan. I was 10 years old. Mm-hmm. I would walk to my friend's house down the street. He was about two blocks away. And before school, we'd put on Beastie Boys or, you know, Raising Hell or LL Cool J or whatever. And listen to that while him and his sister were getting ready. Then we'd walk. School was probably about, I don't know, 4 or 5 blocks from his house. We'd walk down to school, go to school, we'd come back, and we'd go to his house or my house and listen to tapes again. You know, just keep like, we basically like the same 10 albums, I guess, you know, we'd listen to over and over. Shortly after this would be NWA, stuff like that, DOC.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, like, so, but this, the Raising Hell album and Beastie Boys were like the main two.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
same for me.
The funny thing is that this is the next single after It's Tricky, which was February of 87.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So, I mean, so I figure It's Tricky probably had just a huge summer, probably, but I mean, it's still like, this was the next single, you know, like if you were sitting there as a kid waiting for another single, this, you got it. Like, this is what you got. So, I mean, it's probably pretty huge. You know, 88 would be Mary Mary.
Right. By then they're on the way down, but
Right. Right. Yeah. So it's kind of a peak.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause what Walk This Way would have been 86.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of a peak. I would guess.
Yeah.
It's a cool video.
The video is great.
And I mean, for me, it was pretty big. I was listening to a lot of like Smiths and Depeche Mode and that kind of stuff.
But
I mean, like when it came to like the rap stuff, it was all Beastie Boys and Run DMC. So I guess I like some LL Cool J thrown in.
All that, you know, all that Rick Rubin stuff, and Rick Rubin did LL Cool J too.
Yeah, that's right. Jingle Bell Rocks. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, and this is definitely not the first rap Christmas single, but.
Yeah.
It was the first, I don't know, pretty big one. What was the other one that was a little earlier? Now I can't even remember.
Yeah, I can't remember, but yeah.
I want to say Dougie Fresh, right? Yeah, Dougie Fresh.
Was it him?
Yeah. It was still kind of a novel thing to have Christmas rap.
Right.
There'd only been two or three, and not much that would have been played like on MTV, which they did a lot. Stuff like that. So
yeah,
this was huge for that reason too.
So yeah, on the Jingle Bell Rocks documentary, that's they kind of talk about that. And Run says that he got the call from who is that guy? Is he like their manager, I guess? He acts like he's the producer, but he's not the producer.
It's not Rick Rubin.
Yeah, right. But so he says that, you know, they Run said that like he called him and he said it was like a thing for the Special Olympics, right? And he said he's like, he said, I'm eating breakfast. Just made my eggs. I sit down. I was like, well, what do I have to do? And he said, I just want you to write a rap song about Christmas.
Christmas.
You know, maybe in Hollis, you know, like where you grew. It's like, okay. So he said, you know, he said, I'm eating my eggs. He said, I just start writing and writing. He said, call him back in 10 minutes. I say, I'm done.
Yeah.
He said, I'm still eating my eggs. He goes, in fact, the original paper, I wish I still had it. It had eggs on it.
And you can tell.
Yeah, right.
His lyrics is definitely a first draft.
Yeah.
Like, there's no, because there's like three parts. Santa drops his wallet, Run returns it, and then Santa's like, here, you can get it for Christmas.
And then, and also in the documentary, he has this line, and I like, look, I'm sorry, I probably can't agree, but he says something about like, you know, he goes, and it just hit me, and I just, you know, letter from Santa and the dough is for me, and like, and he says like the whole rhyme, I forget, but you know,
he goes,
and I called whoever this manager guy is, called him and I said, I just wrote the best rhyme I've ever written,
I've
or something
written.
Like that,
right?
Come on, dude, like
he's either lying,
Raising Hell?
He's either lying or he was on something at the time that made him think that, right? But yeah. I remember watching that part of the documentary going, no.
Nah.
It's like you wrote Proud to Be Black. That's probably your best song.
Right. Listen to the two albums before that.
You're right.
So I'll say, look, the song, there's two things that you can do in a Christmas song, like usually, right? And they do both of them.
They can do both.
Tell a story about Santa, or you can talk about how you celebrate Christmas, right?
Right. What and you
they
see.
Gifts
under the tree, lights, snow, collard greens. It's all there.
Yes.
Yeah.
So they nail it.
And then there's just this bonus third part, which is mostly about it being cold.
right. Which it was. So, yeah.
Which it was cold. And I never had read the lyrics until in preparing for this, but there's one line where they're talking about it being cold, and he says the hawk is out. And have you heard that expression?
No.
It's an expression that's, I think it's specific to like New York and New Jersey, where if it's cold, they'll say the hawk is out. And yeah, I'd never heard that before. And so I had to look it up. It's like, the hawk is out.
The hawk is out.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, it's cold outside. The hawk is out. And that's what Christmas is all about. So that's what they're saying. The hawk is out. So, you know, it's it seems like a specific local reference. Right. I mean, Hollis is in not too local, not local to Hollis, but
the area,
or even Queens. Yeah. But yeah, to that area. To New York, New Jersey, and it's not an expression we use. I don't even know what it means exactly. I didn't spend time to figure it out.
I was wondering if it's like actually like an old wives saying, like, you know, like the hawk flies, or if it had something to do with like local like weather or something.
Right.
Because like here we have like the snowbird, and so like you know, snowbird tells you if you're off of school. He goes on the news and tells you if you're off. Mm. He does the weather report for school closings. And so in Nashville, it's like. Snowbird's like a celebrity because kids grow up like hoping that he says your school,
right?
And so I want, you know, like, so if there was a lyric from like a local Nashville band about Snowbird, that would be important. Yeah, so I wonder if it's something. Yeah, I'm gonna have to look it up. That's pretty cool. And then, yeah, just to reiterate what you said, the sample probably makes the song. Of course, though, if you were like us and were a fan of the band, that was pretty standard that he was coming up with just the greatest samples. Jam Master.
Oh,
Jam.
That
wasn't anything new for us.
That sample with the drum beat they put on it.
Right.
That loop. And there's a lot of great where they're using all the Run DMC slang. And I think my favorite is the Ill Reindeer.
The Ill Reindeer, yeah.
Yeah, the Ill Reindeer. Normally, no. An Ill Reindeer. But there's a lot. I should have made a list of all, like, the Run DMC words that are used over and over. But ill is obviously a big one. License.
But the thing is like, the reindeer is ill, right?
Yeah.
But he's not illin'.
Yeah, he's ill in the good sense,
illin'. You wouldn't want that.
Which brings me to my favorite joke from when Beavis and Butthead watched this, where Butthead goes, "What's wrong with that elf?" And then Beavis says, "Yeah, he be illin'."
All right, I got a Beavis and Butthead reference myself coming up here. Mm. Are we ready to move on, or?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's a great song. One of my favorites.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. All right. So we're moving on. We're going to close things out with my Something Weird.
Okay.
Something Weird.
Okay. So I'm like you, man. I'm sticking with themes here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm about to get pretty weird. So we're talking about 80s songs. All right.
Yeah.
So I'm going to take you to one of the most 80s songs that you could possibly imagine. And if you weren't there, like my kids listen to this. And so like, I know that there are people who know everything we're talking about and who are probably like, yeah, man, we know all the history of Band-Aid. I don't know. Yeah.
But right. Probably.
There are some people who don't. Okay. Mm-hmm. So let me just tell you what I got here. Something weird. I got Max Headroom's "Merry Christmas, Santa Claus. You're a Lovely Guy."
There's an old man on a sleigh who's like me just for one day. Bestrides the world like a huge colostomy. He gets no presents, he gets no fun, and he's forgotten when he's done. So here's a little gift, a song to him from me. Merry, 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 merry Christmas, Santa Claus. Merry Christmas, Santa Claus.
Do you know the song?
Merry Christmas.
I really should, because I'm a fan of Max Headroom.
I don't think I do, though. Okay. So, for those who don't know, Max Headroom is a fictional, supposedly, AI character. Yeah. He was like a TV host, but he was actually played by a human. So it's like a human playing a computer, right? Am I describing that right?
That's right. Matt Frewer put on some makeup and
Yeah, and it's basically the most 80s thing you could think of. Like, yeah. In the cafe, the 80s cafe in Back to the Future.
Yep.
He's there, right? Is it really him or is it supposed to be him? Is it really the actor? Do you know?
I don't know. In Back to the Future?
Yeah.
No, because they do it with Reagan and
Gorbachev. Right. So, but it's inspired by that, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Inspired by Max. It's Max Headroom's style, but it's Reagan and Gorbachev fighting, yeah.
Yep. But he hosted a show, like a TV show, like played music videos, and then eventually he like did interviews with like the artists.
Sold Coke eventually.
He was the spokesman for New Coke, of all things. Yes. Yeah. He was just a pop culture icon. It was just this computer generated thing, but it was really human. But yeah, it wasn't even
real CGI.
Right. No. They didn't have the technology to actually.
No.
Do it.
No, they faked computer generation is what they did.
Yeah,
they put him in makeup and they did some editing that made it look like it was like computer glitches and stuff, but it wasn't.
And I think it started. There was an original either sci-fi like TV movie or something explained it, right?
Yeah, there was.
And it was like
Edison Carter was a journalist working for Network 21 who got his head hit, and on the sign that he hit, it said Max Headroom for maximum headroom for a truck going through or something. So that's where the name came through. No, it's a great TV show, and it was made as like a pilot
for the
TV show. Yeah, it's a great show.
So the TV show lasted like 3 or 4 seasons. This Christmas special that this song comes from was like between seasons 2 and 3, which happens a lot in England. They'll do like a Christmas special.
Yeah,
it's really cool. So it's called Max Headroom's Giant Christmas Turkey, at least in England. In U.S., it was just called Max Headroom Christmas Special. It aired on Cinemax. I think that's where the TV show aired. And so 1986, the Christmas special had people like Robin Williams, Tina Turner, Bob Geldof is on it. And it's like, interviews with these artists. There's some weird stop motion. The whole thing is weird. My son
does Paul Weller show up?
No, he's not on this. but look, the whole thing could be my something weird. Like if you have an hour to kill this Christmas season, just go to YouTube and watch this Max Headroom Christmas special, because it's amazing. Like, it's really weird. He sings some weird songs, right? There's a song called Children that he sings to children that's kind of not really a good children's song, to be honest. The B-side to this single is called Gimme Shades, and he sings that song, Gimme Shades. Alright, but this song, which is Merry Christmas Santa Claus, in parentheses, You're a Lovely Guy, he is sitting, and now when I say sitting, Max Headroom is a screen.
Right.
He's on a screen. So the screen is sitting at a piano and somehow playing the piano and singing this ballad to Santa Claus, I guess, right? And it climaxes almost like Feed the World. It climaxes with like this choir just kind of coming and surrounding him and singing. Now, in the Christmas special, it's a little different. They have like sort of regular people dressed regular who are kind of coming around the piano, and then the choir comes around the back. And like the music video for the song, it just is the choir. You don't see like the other kids and people who come around. Yeah. So it's two different. You really should watch both. But just some of the lyrics. Let me just tell you some of the lyrics. So let us recall what started it all on that Bethlehem night so long ago, when people gazed from afar upon a giant star, which reminds me of someone you all know. When Jesus in that manger lay, while the sheep and donkeys sway, the wise men and shepherds bowed their heads. Jesus heard the lullaby, so he opened up his eyes, looked up at his mummy, and said, Jesus opened his eyes, right?
Yeah.
Looked at his mom and said, the chorus, Merry Christmas, Santa Claus, you're a lovely guy.
Wait.
It's weird.
Thought he was going to ask for a drum solo.
Look, I'll put the video in the show notes. Everybody needs to see it. I would also suggest watching the Beavis and Butthead version of this video.
Oh.
Where Beavis says something about he looks like Sting, and Butthead tells him, no way, Beavis, Sting sucks. This guy's cool.
Now that sounds familiar, because I must have seen every Beavis and Butthead. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
That part did sound familiar. I guess I probably didn't think there was any way this was actually real. I love everything about you, from the tip of your mistletoes all the way up to that white and wonderful beard. I love everything about you. A bunch of love. I love you, you big, fat, adorable Woo.
Lou?
No, just like woo.
Oh, woo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of like Maroon 85.
Maroon. This, it's weird. Like, again, it's like the most 80s thing that you could, like, if you were going to make an 80s parody, and we're like, let's just get really wacky with this, right?
Yeah.
Because 80s is as more 80s than anything could have ever been at the time.
Right.
This is, I mean, it is peak 80s. So that's my something.
And that's hard to do because the 80s was very aware of itself and, like, seemed to be always referencing itself anyway.
I mean, I guess that's what this has to be. Give me shades. I mean, come on.
Right, right.
Yeah. So there you go, guys. I've just weirded everyone out. And the song's been playing in the background. You've been hearing it. And it's amazing.
Here's one last 80s thing, too, speaking of Max Headroom. The 80s was also known for the Satanic Panic.
Oh, of course.
The way that crosses over with Max Headroom is I had a friend at school who was not allowed to partake in any Max Headroom because his preacher told him that Max Headroom must be controlled by the devil because nothing can operate by itself without the presence of God or something like that. And so, like, you know, because it's not human and because it is this computer generated thing, it's like it must be powered by Satan. And so he wasn't allowed to like Max Headroom or have a Max Headroom Coke poster like I did in my room.
You had a Coke poster?
Yeah, Max Headroom. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, that's amazing.
Yeah. More 80s than I remembered myself, I guess. Right. I also had an Alf for President poster. So.
There you go. Well, we were just very 80s. For two weeks, we've been 80s. We've been eating these Fruit Loops candy canes.
Yeah, for two straight weeks we have.
But that's it. The 80s have come to an end. And next week, well, I guess there's still some 80s, though. Next week, we are doing Christmas Horror.
Should be good.
So things are about to get spooky. We got two shows left. Christmas is almost over. And... yeah, so let us know. Reach out to us, you know, snowsouthsouth@gmail.com. If you got anything to say about horror Christmas movies, any that you like, don't like, yeah, anything like that. Or if you, anything about the 80s that you like or don't like.
Yeah.
Anything you want to say? Anything to add here?
Keep tipping those Christmas shades.
I'm just saying, one more verse. Ah, have a dream today, my friends, that before this Christmas ends, a big sack of Santa love I'll bring, and we'll unite the whole world through. Yes, even Belgians, too.
Even Belgians.
And we'll stand together and sing, Merry Christmas, Santa Claus, you're a lovely guy.
Not a first draft, oddly enough. That one took some thought.
Even Belgians, too.
Even Belgians.
No way, Beavis Stink sucks.
No way.
This guy is cool.
That's the guy who ruled.
All right. I think we're good.
Yep.
Anything?
Good night.
Thanks for tuning in. Keep the bells jingling.
It's gonna snow, ho, ho, right here in Dixie. All will be white overnight. It will be cold on Christmas Day. Hey, hey, right here in Dixie. We'll do-si-do in the snow, so I've been told.
We'll build a snowman.
Snow, ho, ho, right here in Dixie. All will be white overnight. It will be cold.
It will be cold on Christmas Day. Hey, hey, right here in Dixie.
We'll do-si-do in the snow.
So we've been told.
Christmas time, there's no need to be afraid. At Christmas time, we let in light and we banish shade. And in our world of plenty, we can spread a smile of joy. Throw your arms around the world at Christmas time.
Christmas trees, decorate the house with lights at night, Snow's on the ground, snow white, so bright. In the fireplace is the Yule log. Beneath the mistletoe as we drink eggnog. The rhymes that you hear are the rhymes of Daryl's. Like each and every year we bust Christmas carols. Christmas carols.
It's not a Christmas song.
No, not a Christmas song. No, it's just all time, like the all time top.
Sing it again.
Ooh, moves like Jagger. Come on, you know that one.
I don't.
If you can't tell from me versus Adam Levine, then that's terrible because I sound just like him.
Wait, Avril Lavigne sings on it?
Adam Levine.
Oh, okay, Avril.
I'm gonna replace me with him singing right there, and then you'll sound dumb for not knowing.
I think I know Uptown Funk. Is it something like that?
Yes, it's a cover of Uptown Funk.
Okay, now I get it. It was pretty funny the way you sung it, though. If you like comedy, you should leave it.
There's an old man on a sleigh who's like me, just for one day. Bestrides the world like a huge colostomy. He gets no presents, he gets no fun, and he's forgotten when he's done. So here's a little gift, a song to him from me. Merry, 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 merry Christmas, Santa Claus. Merry Christmas, Santa Claus. Merry Christmas, you're a lovely guy. So let us recall what started it all on that Bethlehem night so long ago. When people gazed from afar upon a giant star, which reminds me of someone you all know. Jesus in that manger lay while the sheep and donkeys swayed, and the wise men and shepherds bowed their heads. Jesus heard the lullaby, so he opened up his eyes, then looked up at his mummy and said, Merry Christmas, Santa Claus. Merry Christmas, Santa Claus. Merry Christmas, you're a lovely guy. Merry Christmas, Santa Claus. Merry Christmas, Santa Claus. Merry Christmas, you're a lovely guy.
Dear Santa, you know, words don't come easy to me, but I just want to say I love you. From the top of your Christmas stocking to the bottom of your Christmas bottom. I have a dream today, my friends, that before this Christmas ends, a big Santa's sack of love I'll bring. Then we'll unite the whole world through. Yes, even Belgians too. And we'll all stand together and sing. Merry
Claus, Merry Christmas, Santa Claus, Merry Christmas, you're a lovely guy.